I don't know why I decided to have like a coughing attack on her call. I was like, out of nowhere, I was like, oh, I'm dying. It's bad. It was bad. Luckily, you could just jump right in.
Oh, give me like this program that's been consuming us.
Yeah.
You want to fill your water?
Oh, yeah, that would be great. Thanks. In case that happens again. Yeah. Hello.
Hi. There, can I hear you?
Yes, can you hear me?
Okay. Now I have to find the agenda for this. Do you post it on the screen or do I have to go looking for it in the...
I posted the link in the chat here, but I can also just put it on the screen so everybody can see it.
I can just put it on the, I can just go to the chat. Perfect.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. How are you, Judy?
I'm good. The cleaning lady is here, so I'm not sitting at the kitchen table. Oh. So I'm balancing my iPad on my knee.
Well, your ceiling looks lovely.
Yeah, like, I'm glad you're enjoying the view.
I think it's
quite- Oh my gosh, look at the promptness of this committee, okay? 2 o'clock on the top. No messing around. Love it.
Here we are.
Thanks for the
night. So I am, since we're all here, oh, I see. Wendy, are you actually there?
She is here.
Cool. I guess you would know too. I will, seeing that we have, I haven't taken, you know, roll, but seeing that we have a quorum, if that matters, I'm going to call this meeting to order on time. Oh, it's 2:01.
Oh, 2:01.
but we were all here. And I'm going to make a quick announcement. My car was in a car accident. Everyone is fine. I'm fine. But I have to jump out of here at 2:45. Fortunately, I know all the things that we're going to talk about, so I should be okay, but I'll just turn it over to you guys to discuss, and whatever happens, I'll find out before tomorrow and we'll do what we do. So.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Yeah. We'll see what we can get through. We might fly through. We have been very on top of things, so we'll see.
Very, very fast. So I don't need to call order or anything, right? I mean, I don't need to call roll. I see.
I think Wendy, do you have, yeah, let's do roll call for Wendy.
Yeah, okay. Monica Lane.
Here.
Judy Klinko.
Here.
Shay Jimenez.
Here.
Hi, Shay. It's been a while.
Hi.
So, okay. Seeing everyone present and accounted for, called meeting to order. I think we can jump to, I'm supposed to read the purpose. Is that right or no?
Yep. You can read the purpose. Yeah.
Okay.
So
the called meeting to order, and now I'll read the committee purpose. The Property Development Committee is tasked to evaluate real estate and development opportunities to generate perpetual sources of revenue for the organization in line with our mission, vision, and strategic plans, which is a great jumping off point to item number two, agenda item number two, 450 North Main, which I'll turn over to Dre.
Yeah, perfect. So we, as per the recommendation of this committee, we are continuing our conversations with Habitat for Humanity, but also exploring additional options. One of the challenges that was discussed in this committee prior is that with Habitat for Humanity, it would be in some ways a sale of the property. And so just curious if there was ways to explore different models where that wouldn't necessarily be the outcome. So I do have an option on the table. I popped it in here to say this has been initial conversations. His request would like to know what a formal proposal to this committee would look like, and should we decide, or we can decide after this conversation that he shouldn't bother putting in a formal proposal. This would be for a foundation, Infinite Options. He's from Tucson originally, UHS Penguin, went to Silicon Valley and kind of sold his company there. And now he's moving back to Tucson and wants to really do something for affordable housing, and particularly low income is his passion. So he's looking to propose 13 units, and they would be you know, the vision for it that he's looking for is that they would look like historical little bungalows or casitas, but they would be small and they would be Section 8 eligible. So there would be two bedrooms, some studios, and then some live work studios as well. So 18 rents in total. He started mocking up some of the proposal here. Where it gets a bit interesting is he's very flexible on how we accomplish this. His main goal is that he would really like it to be something that is that stays very affordable and is very mission driven in that aspect. He proposed, and he's, you know, I said, give us some numbers to work with, potentially a 99-year lease, a land lease, which is something we've talked about in the past. And then also he had a couple different options for rent to own, because when we did the comps for that, they came in fairly high. So after 15 years, he would basically pay us 1.7 if we about $80,000 a year. Or if we had if we added interest to it, it would be 1.368 or 30 years. So he's really open. His main thing was, if you want me to work with a particular architect, I will. If you want me to work with a particular developer, I will. If you want me to structure it one way or another, he just, you know, he wants the numbers to work out. And his passion and interest is to see voucher eligible houses on that property. And also potentially his work has been, his software was around learning and education for kids. And so he was maybe even talking about a commercial community space where the kids could get homework help, or maybe a little coffee shop on the corner. Those were kind of all in the discussions, but kind of interesting, because I don't know that we've had a proposal for a long-term land lease or a rent to own. Wanted to throw it here to maybe, do we want to continue to talk about it or discuss it or ask for a proposal? So I cede the floor.
So before we do that, the question that I really wanted Dre to put to us definitively is whether we're interested in selling at all. I know we've talked around it a lot, but I just feel like I would like us to give very clear guidance about, we have very few parcels and we're holding them and we're developing income, which a 99-year lease is not, you know, counter to necessarily, or no, it's okay to sell for the right price. And then, I mean, we could discuss the proposal too, but that's really, really sort of what I'm looking to hear from the two of you, what your thoughts are around that.
We had prepared it to sell it. That was all the work that was done on it. You know, that was the intention. But I'm open to other possibilities. But what do we pay for? What do we pay for taxes?
Okay, this is kind of interesting. So it is looking like the IDA should not have been paying property taxes for that parcel. For our parking lots, yes. For our building, no. And for this parcel, no. So we're still pushing that forward, but in initial conversations with the city, it seems as if we should not have been paying property taxes on the vacant land. So that might eliminate some of the cost. I will kind of throw up here, just since we have, I'm not sure if Shay has, or I'm not sure if everyone has seen it, but I started doing some comps. So we have paid $66,000 of property taxes on this, which we might not have had to have done. You know, I wanted to understand what it would look like if we sold it for 10% profit, of a 30%, 50%, 86%. I did some comps on some area from the recent vacant properties in that area code. So the average, if we averaged them and did it that way, we would be wanting to look at 1.186. So these are just some numbers to keep in your head. So to her question, is there a number at which we say, yep, we feel comfortable and confident with the returns that we've gotten on this, and for the right partner and the right piece, we will sell it or lease it or something.
you know, or are we saying no, this is a source of perpetual source of revenue for us? What do you think? Oh, Shay, sorry, your hand is up, Shay. You can just talk.
Yeah, Shay. I mean, I think I've been pretty clear. I was in favor of us holding the property. You know, I just think that
same.
And then seeing this proposal gives me hope that there are people who are going to be okay with that. And as a developer, that could potentially lower your cost because you're not paying for the land. So I see it as a win-win. And I think there's a financial model out there that makes sense for this. And until we have, you know, and just knowing what the market is doing right now with real estate, like it's just insane to get in the game. I mean, so having these assets free and clear right off the bat, to me, just seems, it seems like we could figure something out. And so but I was curious about that proposal. You know, what was it, a builder? Is he a developer? Who is this Infinite Options person?
he would be self-financing it. So he's a bit more of the financer kind of vision person. He would be assembling a team. He owns a number of properties here in town that he's sort of done. He's sort of fixed them up and rented them. So he's had some experience, but really it's kind of his vision, and he would assemble a team of architects, builders, et cetera, to kind of get it up and off the ground.
Okay. All right. So he's more in the developer role, basically.
Yeah. He would be more of the developer in this case.
Okay. Well, I was really interested. I thought that was one of the stronger proposals we've seen so far. So it seems promising. I don't know, but I'm curious how things are going with Habitat. I mean, you're not locked in. Have they given a formal proposal like that? That's just that clear. And
they have not. Last conversation I said, because he had been like, I just need to know what is the price of the property. So I said, that's fair. you know, so I said, look, here's the comps, that feel free to run some on your own. Happy to discuss, but this is kind of what it's coming in at. Yeah. And then I didn't hear back from that. So it might have been a little bit out of what he was maybe thinking, which doesn't mean we can't do another project with Habitat for Humanity. Maybe it just means it's not on this particular piece of land. But we have a meeting scheduled later in November. Things got kind of busy. So I'll follow up on that.
Yeah, because that would be my guess as well, is that the cost of the land that we would need to reap back our profits is going to kick us out of the territory of affordable housing.
Yeah.
So really, to me, if you want to do affordable housing, the ground lease really is the best option, and I feel like the most viable.
And it also fits within. So, Shay, I'm inclined to agree with you that we did say, you know, pretty strongly, we want to keep our assets, period. And I think this fits within that. So I'm inclined to explore this option with him, but at the 99-year lease rate, not at the, or that option.
Yeah. Not rent to own.
No.
So
we don't change our mind. Like if our mission, like if 5 years down the line, we're looking at a strategic plan and we have other real estate assets and it makes sense to sell this, then sure, we could sell it. But for now, I think it should be off the table.
I think you need to go back to the attorney and find out, with structuring it with these people as a not-for-profit, if they are, they're leasing, who pays, is their property taxes now? Does that change the name of the game?
I would think it, I don't know. That's an attorney question. That's a great question, Judy. My instinct says no, but...
But if he's making it,
I don't know. Yeah.
Then for sure, we would be paying the property taxes. I don't know if we're leasing it to him. So that's a good question for the attorney.
Yeah. But anyhow, it seems like we all agree about exploring it further.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, my guess is that the property tax is like just like any mortgage, you know, whatever financing they would get, that would be factored into the escrow, right?
Well, except this is a lease, but same with lease, just do a triple net lease and you pay property taxes and utilities and all that kind of stuff. So
that would change how much he would be paying us
every
month, so or yearly. And how is that going to fit into his formula?
Right.
Yeah, I was looking at some formulas for ground leases and made my eyes wobble a bit. It's like very complicated. I was like, oh God, you know. So that would be on us to figure out. His proposal was leasing the land at basically 2 cents a square foot. So, you know, this is where it would get very complicated. This one goes out until 99 years here. So that there would be lots of things to think about, like what exactly gets factored into that. His concern, he's like, I'm open to the 99 year, but my big fear is that you guys just decide to randomly sell it to someone and then these houses that I've built get, like, I lose everything, you know? So
I mean, one, that's always the risk. And two, that can be factored into the lease terms. It can all be factored in. Like, it's all just a contract negotiation. If we want to explore the 99-year lease, that he can have the right to purchase, he can have a right to match, he can have an option that is not necessarily a right. There's all sorts of ways to clear
that. Okay, that was his main issue. Is like, would you guys be willing to kind of really walk through what that would look like, that I would have options and that we would have certain warning or something, that he just, you know, that we would come into this real, this like leasing in good faith.
What about a 50-year option rather than a 99-year?
What year?
50.
A 50-year. Okay, yeah.
I'm not opposed to that either.
He'll be long dead.
Oh yeah.
It's a long time away. So
right, or conventional term, like 20 or 15 years, you know. Conventional term maybe makes more sense. I don't know. You said you have an attorney who can help kind of look at this?
Well, we have our general counsel, but if we were going to do in this, we might want to have a specific real estate counsel. Mm-hmm. It seems like a fairly complex deal, and it, you know, walking through it and figuring out how it would work, and then just making sure the way that he pitched it to us on here, I don't think it doesn't sound like a great option for us. It's like,
well, maybe going to an attorney who could come up with a better option for us that we could the Marshall Foundation. See what attorney they're working with.
Yeah, the other reason that I think the Marshall Foundation is a great reference point for a question that I had is I don't know anybody who really deals with long-term land leases except for the Marshall Foundation. So I don't know if his 2 cents per square foot is reasonable or not, but they rent. They'd have us, or I was going to suggest talking to like a land broker, but even those are hard to find these days. So, you know, I don't know how we check that comp, but that's one that I would want to look into. But Marshall Foundation is a great start.
Yeah.
And you connect with their attorney and have them take a look at it. And, you know, what would we be able to do in terms of a counteroffer?
Mm-hmm.
That's right. I mean, I do think there needs to be a counteroffer. I think $12,000 a year in rent seems very low to me, especially if we factor in if whatever property taxes are happening. Like, we need to make sure that we're covering our costs and we actually are generating revenue from it, especially if this is
for the Marriott. Mm-hmm. Gets $2,000 a year.
Gets what, Judy?
$2,000 a year.
Yeah,
at least. But at the end of 40 years, they get the property and the building on it.
Mm-hmm. Wait, which they, the Marshall Foundation or the
Foundation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't think that's not an uncommon, I mean, I just said it's uncommon to find it, but that's not an uncommon proposition for developers, right? He would just have to build his model, understanding that he doesn't get to keep it when he's done. So you take your profits then, however you take them. I mean, that may kill affordable housing, but that's all up in the air to figure out.
Well, right. To me, the performa that could shift a lot, that you could do a mixed, I mean, it might be more viable, you know, doing some market rate thrown in there with Section 8. I mean, mm-hmm. You're doing all right with affordable housing to me, even if you get like 30% of the units affordable. Mm-hmm. I mean, usually, and 30% is usually high. Like, most people are only going to commit to like 10% maybe affordable. So I don't know. I think you could run the numbers a lot of different ways and figure out a way to make that scenario work. But just having someone who's willing and able and seems like the right.
He does feel like a very reasonable person to work with, because he's really kind of mission. This is kind of just a passion thing that he wants to happen. And so he's very open. And, you know, I had mentioned your expertise, Shay, especially since he wants to do that sort of like smaller model, you know. So if we have someone that we can really work with, that's good, because we can play around with it. And if there is this commercial piece that he wants to build on it, you know, factoring maybe that separately. So, okay, great. So I will tell him.
Mm-hmm. We don't do business with him. It also provides information for us,
yeah,
in terms of, you know, working with somebody else who comes along, in terms of making up, you know, suggesting that might be a way that they would want to do, yeah, a deal.
Right.
Yeah, definitely a learning process. Okay. And then, so he does want to submit a more formal proposal, and he would be very interested in presenting or doing something like that. So
did you do a search on his not-for-profit? Did you check with StarNet?
No, that he hasn't. His intention is to sort of set up a single purpose
entity, yeah,
foundation specifically for this property. So that it hasn't been launched yet. I mean, I did look up his business, but
how long has he been in business for?
with his software company,
with the infinite
with development, with real estate.
Oh
yeah.
So the infinite options is not a development entity.
He has Infinite Options is his software company, and then he wants to make an Infinite Options Foundation that would have a sole purpose of this. Sole purpose entity that would be this. But, you know, those are all the things that would come out in a proposal, is kind of what's your background, what's your experience, all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
He's looking for a shelter for his money, too.
I know. I'm like, he must have done some real gentrification in the Bay Area.
No, I mean, he did educational software.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. His real estate experience has really been multifamily apartment units that he has purchased, renovated, and rents.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The only thing that I would ask Dre is that I think it would be nice for whether we have somebody from the Marshall Foundation talk to the three of us, like come to a committee meeting, or whether you have a meeting and we get filled in before we see his proposal.
Yeah.
It would be nice, yeah, to understand.
So that we have, you know, a full, yeah, we can make a, yeah, we have a full picture of what we need to see. I think that would be very helpful. Okay. All right, cool. So just have some to-dos on my list, but definitely we can keep exploring this option.
Okay.
All right. The next piece on our agenda is I submit to the city of Tucson a sort of a bundle proposal totaling $6 million, and which kind of includes some ideas that we would like to do to has a number of different projects that are kind of bundled within this one thing. One of the things that we are talking about is building out our community ownership fund for local stewardship of local property. So this would be a number of different projects and programs that would fit under this bundle of community ownership. And so kind of in line with some of the pre-development stuff that we have been talking about. So the goal and objective of our role that we would propose is to support economic development that doesn't displace communities, but really empowers them to build services, jobs, and resources to support their own thriving and diverse communities. So this initiative would include a pre-development accelerator. So we would help engage in pad development through upzoning, remediation, value add, infrastructure improvements, and really working on putting the right building blocks into place on all these empty lots that we have around in town, working with the city of Tucson in a number of different ways to make more shovel-ready land available And hope to encourage more affordable housing because we're sort of reducing the risk for developers and the time to revenue by putting in some of that pre-work. A pre-development assistance fund. So this proposal is to provide low-cost capital to support local diverse small developers in offsetting pre-development costs. So it would be an easy application process, a revolving loan fund with a low interest rate that would help cover some of your initial pre-development. We probably work closely with the Brownfields Fund that the city has to do phase one, phase two. This might be a supplement or gap financing for additional pieces that are not that don't fall within that grant program. Another thing talking about, again, lease to own. So really trying to increase local ownership of property by buying real estate, commercial real estate, and leasing it to local entrepreneurs, potentially by adding different types of easements that make sense to it. And then enable and facilitate local business owners to be able to own their own properties. And then, you know, we could engage in sort of a land trust and easement model. Maybe we'll start with our first one, I guess. And so thinking really strategic about long-term use of land and how it kind of fits into master plans with a larger strategy for building Tucson. So I sent this to the mayor and to Mike Ortega, and they're both really excited about this. Mike is in particular is very interested in building a very close relationship with the IDA. He has a number of ideas of how it would work. I kind of laid out a menu. I was like, were you thinking that you would give the IDA property and we would pre-develop it, that we would co-develop it, that we would purchase property and sell it to the city of all the, and he was like, all of the above. He's like, I think we could engage in a range of different ways to collaborate on better usage and land strategies for the city of Tucson. So we are setting up another meeting to go in more detail about what that particular relationship would look like, but there was definitely talk about dollars on the table for the IDA to support this. My question to the Property Development Committee meeting is, have I sort of accurately bulleted it out what types of programs we would want in here? Is there something missing? Should one of these not be included in our strategies? Where should I focus on our priorities? Just kind of wanted to talk about this idea with the committee and get your feedback before we move any further.
All right, then, let's do it. You know, it's funny, Dre, I didn't ask you when you first saw this, where the lease to own model came from. Did you come up with that, or did the city suggest it, or?
It's something that's come up a lot in stakeholder meetings. A number of businesses are struggling because of their renting, and they're just not really ever able to own their property, which can lead to displacement. So it's just something that has been a big problem. So I thought maybe there's something we can do in here to try to fix this.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. I just wasn't sure where it came from. And then could you expand a little bit more on the community, like how you see that happening?
Yeah. Sorry, was that a question?
Easements particular. Easements is the other one. Community land trusts, I understand, but I don't understand how easements fit in that.
This is something that I've been in conversations with Arizona Land and Water. So Arizona is really struggling. This is in terms of climate, this is kind of the climate hat that we're wearing. A lot of our land in Arizona, only 12% of it is protected for agricultural purposes. And something that's been happening at a very rapid pace is we're having developers purchase land in southern Arizona, sort of use up the water rights, sell those to housing developments in Phoenix, and then allowing that land to go kind of wild, which creates a dust bowl scenario. So there's been some conversations about how can we actually protect some of the land around Tucson so that it is reserved for regenerative agriculture or preserved to protect it from becoming, I want to say feral, but it's not feral. There's a word they use in that culture. So they're putting easements on it. So basically say anyone who buys this property has to be using these regenerative properties, and this farm has to be passed and has to use these things. So there's ways that you can actually create sort of these long-term requirements for land as it relates to protecting it from this kind of predatory water grab.
Interesting.
I know, I learned so much. And apparently if you don't have farms on it, then it's really bad, but you have to have the right type of farm. Otherwise all our water gets used. So it's actually, some farms actually preserve the water in our land in it. So it's anyway, I learned a lot about this talking to them. And so that's one strategy that we can be thinking about. If our goal is to really think about the 100 years planned for our region, it's not, our boundaries are going to be a little different. And so how can we be proactive now thinking about the way that land is being allocated? And it's just been a real big problem with the water rights sort of being stripped of pieces of property. So you never can build something productive there. It's just dead land.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So yeah, this is really interesting. This is all really great. I think this is super exciting. The pre-development accelerator. So I guess I'm just curious, with all this, this is basically all potential future programming that will be housed within the IDA. Are you seeing this as potentially also generating revenue for us? Would we have additional staff for this? I'm just curious kind of what
that was. I think that this is going to be the revenue engine for the IDA that's going to fund all of our sort of more mission-driven elements. There's a lot of money to be made in pre-development. There's a lot of, I had a chance to speak to a number of developers who are doing this in other areas. And the margins are really high and it's pretty low effort. So you identify good pieces of property, you put some value add into it, you're able to sell it and, you know, get it moving. Obviously, we're going to have a mission driven to that as well. We want to make sure that who we're selling it to is, you know, we feel like that's a good fit for what our goals are. But there's a lot of money to be made in that. And that's what I think is going to be able to actually fund a lot of our other stuff.
And then Dre, didn't you suggest, or maybe that didn't shake out in conversations, just a straight for fee model as well? It's definitely something people could just pay us to do the way you would with any consultant.
That's right. So one of the models is we purchase land, flip it, sell it. Another model, second model, is the city of Tucson actually grants us land that they have an intended use for, but they can't actually do it. So they would grant us the land, we would do it, and then we would both benefit from that. And then the third model is for fee service. Something that we've been talking about is that the IDA would have a sort of an HOV lane that our permits and requests would be facilitated quickly, which would give us a market edge. So if you were a developer and you were working within the city of Tucson and you wanted to, you know, you didn't want to have to bother with pre-development, you could just pay the IDA to do the pre-development work for you as, you know, a contract basis. So there's kind of three revenue models that bundle up under that one particular bullet.
Dre, would you have the ability, or would the city of Tucson be willing to also throw economic incentives under that pre-development accelerator, as in liaising between the developer and, well, Barbara Coffee, essentially? I know that I've been offered to consult on liaising with Rio Nuevo or the city of Tucson for smaller developers, for smaller, newer developers. I'm doing it just because I care about seeing good projects done, but I think there's a market for that that could fit under that as well.
Where we would help facilitate navigating them through the incentive process?
Yeah, I always think of that as part of pre-development, frankly.
Yeah, absolutely. That we would sort of, we would know what all the incentive projects are. We would know which ones they are, you know, which ones they'd be eligible for, and sort of a white glove service for facilitating that whole piece at the beginning. Yeah. And so to your question, Shay, yes, this would come with staffing. And so we do have an urban kind of planner. It's like a planner plus analyst role that we'll discuss next, but that we want to build our own capacity, that we'll
really, really good at this is the idea.
I mean, yeah, I could see the value. I mean, to me, the biggest value you would bring also is just the knowledge. I mean, one of the biggest problems I have, you know, even as I'm going through permitting, like we're finding out major zoning issues during construction documents phase, which is the wrong time to be finding out those problems. So even just getting a clear picture of all that the zoning does or doesn't allow, all the easements have been mm-hmm. looked up, all of the, you know, prior history has been looked up of the property. Like there's so much that goes into, you know, that could help, you know, and that I could really see, again, the value for this kind of service, in addition to like figuring out how you navigate or capitalize on opportunity funds or GPLED or like all these other city incentives that are just for the most part just sitting there and rarely get utilized. I mean, GPLED's been probably the most utilized out of all those, but I don't know anyone who's cracked the nut on opportunity zones, you know? And so, mm-hmm. So there's a lot that I could see just a ton of value in services like this.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and for different scales. I mean, I think that you need this. It's just as valuable if you're developing a fourplex as if you're developing, you know, a 100 unit project.
Absolutely. To me, what I like about this is it's so community facing. It's one of the most visible ways for us to say, hey, we work with developers, not compete with them. We work with them and we focus on, you know, smaller, it seems like focusing on smaller developers, community developers, if you will, which I like quite a bit. But the other thing, and Shay, I think you might agree or this would make sense as well, is that this reminds me of when I first started doing the Clifton, one of the things the city of Tucson told me and other people that it has is essentially a development ombudsman. Like basically you could have somebody in the city of Tucson that does all of this for you, and they never had the money or the staffing for it. So combined with the investment, it seems like they just want to outsource that to us, which I think is great. Frankly,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely, Monica. I was just talking to Sarah Megason yesterday. What happened with those City of Tucson ombudsmen? I have too many projects that are like, uh-huh. I'm finding out major zoning issues when we're like at the third round of review for permitting. I'm like, this is insanity. Like, this is insanity. Like, I cannot. We can't work this. Like, who's going to want to work in Tucson working like this?
Yeah.
Like,
and then paying architects to go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth is ridiculously expensive. And right now contractors pay Lisa, what is that, Speedy? You know, they pay her to, you know, expedite things. And it's, you know, it's kind of a mess. And to, you know, consolidate all of that in one place and to do it in a way that's accessible to people
mm-hmm.
I love the idea, especially again, if City of Tucson is going to kick in money.
Well, we would become a one-stop. And in addition mm-hmm. to becoming a one-stop, this would create a pipeline for our small bond program.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, and I think that's where it feels crazy that the City of Tucson doesn't have this, but the fact is they don't. And I think it actually gives a better face if it's, oh, look at the, you know, it's this nonprofit that's doing this. And it feels a little bit, you know, as they get into it with the City of Tucson, it's not the person who's helping you and the person who's saying no to you in the same, you know, it's like, so that's exactly the idea, is that we would really wrap around developers to say, here's all the things you're eligible for. Let us do some of the grunt work, you know, and that's kind of something that we would be able to provide. And again, the target being helping to make our local developers more competitive so that we can, you know, that they're going to be more eligible for other types of financing and just really grow more grassroots community building. So,
yeah, I'm curious as to how both you, Judy, and Shay feel about the community land trusts and easements. I love the idea. I love love how it's trying to fix a particular problem. But to me, that feels like if I were going to stage the order of what we do in this program, I would put it in exactly that order. Like the community land trusts either feels like, I'm like, is that part of our mission? Or it feels like, wow, that's a lot and we should phase that in later. I'm curious as to how you guys feel about that.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I think it's a long-term goal. I think, and depending on the need, you know, I think it's, you know, I've been working now with Pima County Community Land Trust for over the past year, and it's just a really difficult model. I see a bunch of people trying to start them, and I'm like, dude, you're not going to start one without at least $1 million in the bank. Like, you need a ton of equity up front. Plus, you have this structure that's still sort of hard to sell. I think that most consumers just are still having a hard time understanding it and wanting to go that route. So I think it is a long-term goal. I although I do have a personal interest in that model, and I mean, partly why I am working with Gigi and Maggie, you know, is we've started some basic, very preliminary conversations, but I am interested in the future of our local land trust that we have. And so, you know, yeah. I do feel like it's a really important resource, and it, but I don't know, you know, but I think it's really difficult to do. And the one we have in Tucson only exists because they had initially, like, I don't remember how many millions of dollars they had, but it was like a 10 million, I think it was around, they had neighborhood stabilization funding from the last recession. So,
Oh, wow.
I agree with you as well what it's worth. I have a little bit more passion about more of the agriculture industrial aspect, because I do think that we're being served in the housey when Picklid and Salt, and there's some other ones that are in that space, but nobody's really doing as much with kind of more on the industrial or commercial or ag part. But it's like a whole... It's like a whole animal. So if you guys say we don't have to focus on that, like, I will not be mad.
I think it's a long-term goal. Like, just doing goals 1 and 2, I think is going to take a few years. And then exploring other options, you know, further down the line, when once we have, you know, income stream and staffing and all those other aspects figured out, I think that's what makes sense to me, because the last two lease to own models. And again, I'm super interested in all of these ideas, but I think that they're going to take some time. They're going to take some time to develop and navigate and make sure that you have the community buy-in and that you really are addressing a particular need. And, but I think the first two sound super marketable, super needed, like yesterday. And really exciting. So
yeah, the lease to own is interesting because it does tie in. The strategic growth committee did want us to be a little bit more aggressive with real estate purchases. So I could see if we're doing lots of real estate purchases, maybe we are intentional about buying
places right now.
What? Yes. I don't know where that idea came from, you know. and so maybe we kind of, if we're doing lots of real estate purchases, maybe we think about trying to do one or two of these as part of that and just see how it works and if we're happy with it. And
I'm inclined to go ahead and leave lease to own in there. And it could just be because I like the look of 3 check marks instead of just 2, with the understanding that we have a lot of exploring to do with that. And we're not going to probably go out of the gate with lease to own, but it'll be interesting to see what we learn going through this with 450 North Main. But I would drop the community land trusts for sure. I would drop it for now.
Okay. All right.
What do you think, Judy?
Or you could do phase 1, phase 2.
Yeah. It's helpful to set a vision. I do think people ask a lot about it. They're like, you know, it's a very kind of sexy word. It's like, oh, we're going to do trust, or we're going to do this. So maybe like, we're thinking about it, but not now, or, you know, that's a future thing. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, cool. So I'll let you know about those conversations.
So next steps is going back to the city, but those conversations, they're progressing pretty quickly towards setting this up. Is that the understanding?
it seems like Mike has had in his mind this vision and dream, and so he like keeps like hinting at like how he wants to break it all down. So I'm very curious to see if it, you know, what exactly that is. He seems like he has some properties in mind with site selectors who are like really wanting to get moving. So, you know, that's why I thought it was like, well, let me just at least put the position out in out there so that, you know, if these things do move quickly, we have capacity to support them.
Cool.
So yeah, could be soon. All right. So next one. Okay. Oh, this is a lot of fun too. Oh, so exciting. Okay. So this is related to some really exciting conversations we've been having with, again, the city of Tucson, but different department, economic development.
Drew, I wish say what this is for the, what the agenda item is, since you're the
oh,
one.
Oh, yes. The agenda item is discuss co-development of 257 North Stone property. So I'll just be a little bit brief because there's lots of details to talk about this. And I know, you know, if we're hurry, we might be able to keep you here the whole time, Monica. So
moving faster than I thought. Yeah.
So what's exciting about this is, so I was in conversations letting them know about our Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and this $3 million that we're going to be supporting minority businesses, and we're excited, all this. And they were talking about how that really aligns with their Navigator program. And so I kind of just mentioned, I was like, well, where are you doing all your workshops? And they said, oh, we're renting a place and it's not really ideal. It's too small and there's no parking. And so I was like, well, we have an empty building. What if we sort of did a co-location where our new minority lending program was housed in the same place that you're doing technical assistance? So if you're the small business owner, you can get mentoring, you can get classes, you can get workshops, and then you can actually get a loan in the same place. And so that really sparked a lot of cool conversations. I happened to be meeting with the mayor next day, and then this was like, Mike was like, done deal. I want this. This is happening. We just have to work out the details. So that was really exciting, but, you know, putting the brakes on it, wanted to discuss with this group, you know, what this might look like. The idea would be an innovative fusion of adaptive technical support and affordable capital for underserved businesses housed in a single location. So that has always been my passion, is that there's always this drop off when you're doing technical support for small businesses. You're helping them with all the stuff, and then it's like, okay, go get the financing. And then there's that connection between getting the capital you need and the technical support is really, there's no one else really doing this well. So this could be really exciting for us. So there's our little beauty. There she is. So cute. But the idea would be that the city of Tucson would pay for renovations to make this a vibrant community small business hub, in collaboration with the IDA and the city of Tucson. And so they asked me what kind of things we would need in there. We need workshop space, we need tech, we need conference rooms, flexible workspaces, some offices, kitchen area. And then Frankie was like, oh, we need a commercial kitchen. But at least a little prep space.
Not there.
No, we don't. We don't need a commercial.
Not there.
Well, so anyway, I haven't sent this to anyone. This is just kind of like me playing around with, could we actually fit it in that spot? You know, we could take off the second floor and have a big workshop space here that could be drop-in. The Navigators could work out of there. We could also do workshops in there,
Dre, before we get too far into the details, I want to make sure that we're all on the same page with what the bigger picture is, which is essentially we would have offices that have been renovated and paid for by the city of Tucson in exchange for co-locating with them to help small businesses navigate through funding and development and all that kind of stuff. That's the gist of this, right?
Yeah, that's the gist, is that we would create a center for small businesses here. And that the city of Tucson would pay for it. Yeah.
Okay. Now, details. Wait, hold on. Anybody have any questions about that before we go into mezzanines and whatnot?
No.
Okay. any we don't want to do this?
No, I thought this was really exciting. I mean, I guess I'm just curious with both of these ideas. I mean, it seems like we would need, you're going to need space soon, and you're going to need offices for staff for both the pre-development center and this center.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious how that factors into this as well.
No, that's a great question. So I would see this is the Tucson IDA's offices.
Uh-huh.
We would have offices there. That's kind of my deal with the city of Tucson, is that this is our placement downtown. Now we'll have workshop space available. Their navigators will have a bit more kind of like drop-in space or more co-working in a public space. So I think that getting that relationship right, so that, because we're going to be needing to use this, for our work. So, that's like getting clear on that would be important, I think. Let's see.
Wait, did that answer any of your question, Shay?
I see the need for us having office space, especially as the programming is potentially going to expand, and then having the opportunity to partner with the city. Yeah, it all makes sense to me.
Okay. They're a team of three, so it's not, and then it's only one like full-time person, and then their team is really kind of off on site. So it's not huge. We're not trying to merge in like 25 people into this.
Okay.
Both pretty small teams. But I would anticipate, in terms of it, you know, we would have the city of Tucson's contribution. We've allocated in our budget $150,000 for renovations of this property this year. We could access some grants. Rio Nuevo might be interested, since it's kind of this, it's sort of a different vision than just our offices. And then I think, and this is kind of where Mike's eyes started getting all excited. He thinks that we can attract a lot of investors into this model and really make kind of a big deal of it, where other people might be interested in supporting as donors, maybe donate, you know, sponsoring some of the tech or, you know, different pieces. So we can kind of do it up as a community renovation project.
What do you mean by revenue sources and offsets? Offsets to what? Revenue sources I get, but offsets to what?
To the costs.
Oh, okay.
So we have our program revenue, right? But, you know, we do have asbestos, so I could offset the cost of the $10,000 for asbestos by getting the Brownfields grant. We're going to do our small business loans out of there. I see potential, if we do it right, we could rent the space for different events. We could do, you know, our workshop, we could do workshops that would have fees. So we can have a little bit of program revenue. But I think that some of the ways that we're going to have to get a bit creative about, if we really want to do an amazing thing, what are other sources of opportunities to help us offset the cost of the renovation?
Mm-hmm. Is there more you wanted to show us?
No, so that's the main idea. I did feel like I needed to put pictures in it, because otherwise you're just like, what? How are you going to do it? But there is a way. I think there is a way with that building and the square footage that we have to make it work for our needs. But you know, it'll be like really ripping out, gutting it quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. And if I understand you correctly, this is a thing that the city of Tucson is also pushing relatively quickly. So we would have these discussions, like they're asking us for numbers right now, which of course.
Yeah. Yeah, they asked for kind of two budgets. They asked for a budget that would just be like a little bit more basic, and then what would our pie in the sky, as amazing as we could possibly make this, you know, what would that budget look like? They have, as part of this conversation, they have their second round of ARPA grants coming out, and for that they have capital investment dollars that are allocated to the city. So they actually have a bucket of money right now that is supposed to be dedicated towards building infrastructure to support economic development. So that kind of for them fits right under this. And this is something they've wanted to do anyway, which is build sort of a small business center. So they had a piece of property that is the city owns, but it was being held up so much in their real estate department that they just would rather not do that and just have it. It'll just be quicker with us. So, which is like, you are the city, you can make it happen.
That's why they're outsourcing pre-development, right?
I wish, but it's just not the case. I just feel like projects with them just take twice as long to do if they do it in-house. But that's just,
So basically what we'd be looking for here is, I always like to say permission because I'm very mindful of, you know, this is everybody's board, but permission to continue to talk with the city about this, continue to sort of suss out numbers and, you know, that sort of thing. And we'll keep coming back to the committee with those conversations, but assuming nobody hates the idea.
I love the idea. I think it's really exciting. I think it's a great use of our space, a great way to grow us as well as grow a resource that the city needs. I would say too that I don't think you have to be hindered by the budget. I think that the space, there's creative ways that you can, with remodels, I always feel like you can grow into the space. Like with remodels, sometimes it's nice just to live in the space for a while without doing a major renovation, just to figure out what you really do or don't need. So I don't feel like you have to be hindered by the budget either. I think you can make something great happen with a smaller budget. And I think you can make something good happen with a bigger budget. And for me personally, I'm just of the mind that, like, especially when you're doing anything that's new and startup, like, why go for broke right at the beginning? Why not just do something smaller and get the revenue flowing right away? Versus like investing a ton of money up front. And
that little baby is so cute. Oh, not a little baby anymore.
Oh, sorry. I have a call from Jim Topol real quick. Sorry.
Actually, if we can pause for a quick sec, I actually have to jump off anyway. So
okay.
Pause back on.
Okay. I know you do have to leave. So the last thing we were just going to talk about is that urban planner position. Wendy had broken down the types of skills that we're seeing in our applicant pool, and there was going to be
You want to just wait for Shay to come back on? Do we want to pause for a minute? Like, I'll jump off and she'll come back on, because I know what you're talking about here.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. So I'm going to jump off, and then you just can continue when she's back on.
So we're not at quorum, so we have to unquorum and then re-quorum, right?
Yeah,
we'll just go into a recess.
Mm-hmm. Just for a minute. You'll be back at quorum when she comes back, right?
Yeah.
Hey, everybody. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Oh, there's
it.
See?
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Okay. Thanks, Monica. All right. The final piece of our agenda today is, so now that you guys have a full scope of all the types of cool real estate-y stuff that we have going on and that are going to be really super relevant very quickly, I wanted to talk to you guys about the types of applications we've been getting for our urban planner position. And some of them are really exciting, but I really want to have your thoughts on where to prioritize the skill set so that we can accomplish these things that we're talking about. So we have about 13 applications and the application will be open for another 2 weeks. So continue to promote, but we have some good options here. All right. So I put into the folder, it's in the link. You can actually see the actual job announcement and the pieces in there. And the requirements. So what I want to understand from the committee is, like, what is our highest priority skill sets? What is kind of middle priority and what would be low priority? For example, here's a couple of the different types of applications that we've had. Someone who has an architect and urban planning and policy background. They're really very creative illustration, you know, the most beautiful portfolio you've ever seen with all the gizmos and gadgets, you know, very beautiful. But they're primarily an architect who has just graduated with an urban planning degree. Another one is more in the economics, and they have a big sustainability bent to them. So they've worked a lot in that. A lot of GIS, a lot of mapping, a lot of data heavy pieces as well. And then another applicant is a little more tactical. He's been a land acquisition manager. So he's been doing land use analysis, real estate planning and development, GIS, policy and rezoning.
Yeah.
So that, you know, so it's cool. And, you know, one of them has like a PhD in ethnography of the movement of cities. You're like, oh, that's so cool. But, you know, for these things that we need to accomplish, where should we be really pushing our applicants in our interview process and really trying to, what are the technical skills that we need them to have?
I mean, for me, right off the bat, number three seems the most valuable to me. I mean, I think that, you know, the creative side is really great, and like, it's just two different positions, but like, just right off the bat, we need somebody who understands zoning and who understands planning and development, and almost like we basically kind of need to hire a developer, almost like a developer, you know, somebody. That's how I'm seeing this position. But is this position specifically for, and that's where I was confused too, is this position specifically for this development arm, or is this related to one of the projects we already have?
Well, the goal is that we would, I mean, this, because we have a team of three, we need someone to wear multiple hats. So this person would be building out our pre-development new programs and be the primary person on that, obviously with the help of subcontractors, you know, doing soil and so sort of facilitating all the contractors that we're going to need for all that stuff. But then also, if we're going to be doing this massive renovation, I'm going to be looking for them to be helping us do performas, helping us look at all the RFPs, helping facilitate and oversee our own property development. And then, you know, if we are doing lots of commercial real estate, you know, as Patricia's goal is to buy lots of things, you know, so it's kind of all the things, like everything to do with real estate that we're working with. Like, I need somebody who can help facilitate, manage, oversee, and help drive that forward. Obviously with the support of all the expertise we have on the board. So it's kind of a difficult position, because if you're just wanting to sit in an office and, you know, do data GIS, like it's going to be not that, it's going to be like a lot of things. You just have to really love real estate and land, and you know, it's a lot of diversity in the skill set. So I tried to really make that clear in the job description, that you're going to be doing a lot of things, and some people will find that fun, you know, and maybe even starting to help us with the master plan of our block 175, you know. So there's a lot of different.
That's what I thought. I thought you had, this position was specifically for that project.
No.
But I see that it's now much more broad.
Yeah. I would say the main thing is because I think pre-development is going to be our primary revenue generator, I would need them to step into that day one.
Yeah. Then, I mean, I think that to me, the number, like, the skill set would be a combo of a number two and number three. At this point, I don't see the need so much for an architect. Like, it's great, but you don't need that right now. You can hire that out. You can subcontract that out. Mm-hmm. I feel like what we really need in-house is people who understand performa, real estate, and zoning, and how all those factors interplay. Yeah.
Okay, I'm so happy because that's my favorite candidate. But I was just number three is really cool. It's a really cool candidate. So,
and it sounds like they have experience as well, which again, I seems preferable to somebody just out of school. But
yeah, he has over 10 years in land acquisition and is a manager level. So it's awesome. Just it's a little bit different than coming in fresh.
Local. Mm-hmm. Local. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of the other people are from all over the country. And again, when you look at their portfolios, you're like, wow, this is so pretty. This is amazing. But I was like, no, can't be drawn in by the pretty. They have to do the numbers.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's more about having, to me, the experience in navigating these kinds of projects is what's going to be the most
valuable. Yeah. Okay, great. So I am encouraged that we have a very, very viable, and we actually have a couple that are a bit more like this. I'm going to do an experiment and re-release the application with more specific land acquisition or real estate, like in the title, and see, you know, we have 2 more weeks if we get more people, and also I'll target, I can kind of repost it with a little bit of a different title and see if we get more folks on like Indeed and LinkedIn and stuff. But I am encouraged. There's been some really, really cool folks. And so, you know, we'll continue to grow that. But that's really helpful insight. And so I'll focus on recruitment for the last 2 weeks on that, on those skills.
Yeah. And I would also highlight the, you know, just kind of the basics of development, you know, the, you know, able to understand Performa or create them or mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's, you know, the development side to me is equally important.
Yeah. So developer as opposed to like land or real estate, developer is more specific terminology to like really hone in on that.
I mean, I don't know what else to call it. It's not that you want, it's almost like someone who can, I don't know, the economic piece that they can analyze, they can read those things and analyze them and understand mm-hmm. them, because really that's what we want, is someone who can look at a deal right away and tell us, yes, this makes sense for us. No, this doesn't. I'm trying to think of someone I know who's in that role. I mean, I guess kind of like a real estate analyst. I don't know what you would call it. I don't know.
That was where it was going back and forth, where it was like real estate analyst or planner, real estate analyst or planner. And so then I was like, well, let me just try with planner to see if we get kind of a more interesting group of people. And there, it has been true. They've been all over the place on, you know, transportation and all these interesting things. But I think I'll repost it with what was the first title, which was real estate analyst, to see if that digs out some more people, and then we'll have all of them. So
because planning is such a broad topic, like the schools across the country and planning focus on such different things, I think it's too broad of a term.
Okay, cool. All right, so we're ending an hour early, y'all.
Yay.
Good, because this is kind of a marathon for IDA for you guys this week. So we have our board meeting tomorrow. So do one of you want to do call to public and adjourn for us? And then I think we'll be good to go.
I'll do a call to the public. Nope, there's no one who's interested in asking us any questions or participating with us. So I call this meeting to adjourn. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
All right. I will see you guys tomorrow. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.